Rihanna, welcome.
Thank you. Well, we can now look at another interesting topic, being financial instruments. But before I start, I just thought to give a quick overview of where we are in the project of to replace IS39. Now, the exposure draft on limited amendments we're going to talk about today is part of the classification and measurement phase of the overall project to replace IS39, and we are hoping to finalise this phase by the end of the year. The other phases of the project, which involve impairment and general hedge accounting, is also ongoing, and as Sue said during the update, the impairment exposure draft will be published shortly, and the board is also hopeful to finalise their redeliberations on the general hedge accounting model either at the March or the April board meetings, and to publish the final chapter shortly after that. Now, if we move on to the limited amendments to IFRS 9, the exposure draft proposes only a narrow scope amendment to the classification and measurement requirements for financial assets in IFRS 9, and that is because the ISB believes that IFRS 9 is fundamentally sound, and that when classifying financial assets using a basis that provides information about future cash flows to the users of financial statements is the right one. Consequently, the exposure draft does not fundamentally change these concepts. The ISB is also mindful of the need to complete the overall project in a timely manner and to minimise the cost and disruption to entities that have already applied IFRS 9 or have undertaken significant preparations to do so. The exposure draft therefore reaffirms the classification requirements in IFRS 9 today. It clarifies how these principles should be applied, and it proposes the introduction of a fair value through other comprehensive income measurement category. On slide 4, the classification and measurement structure currently in IFRS 9 is illustrated, and it uses a principles-based approach to classify financial assets in their entirety. Now, the two criteria used to do this are whether the contractual cash flows represent solely payments of principal and interest, and what the objective of the business model is within which the financial assets are held. So in simple terms, if a financial instrument is a simple debt instrument and it is held to collect those cash flows, the asset must be measured at amortized cost because it provides information that is useful to assess the amount, timing, and uncertainty of future cash flows. All other financial assets must be measured at fair value through profit and loss. As we can see on slide 5, this exposure draft builds on that structure. So, an entity is still required to assess the contractual cash flows of the financial assets and the business model within which the assets are held to determine how to account for them. The main proposal in the exposure draft is the introduction of an additional element within that structure, the fair value through other comprehensive income measurement category based on a business model assessment. Now, if you first look at the cash flow characteristics, the exposure draft reaffirms the principles about contractual cash flow characteristics in IFRS 9 today. So in other words, a financial asset is assessed in its entirety to see if its contractual cash flows economically represent payments of principal and interest. So if a financial asset contains payments that is linked to an equity index, those cash flows won't be payments of principal and interest only, and the asset must be measured at fair value through profit or loss. However, to address application questions received by the ISB with respect to particular instruments, the exposure draft introduces application guidance to determine if the cash flows have been significantly modified through leverage or an interest rate mismatch. And these clarifications are illustrated on slide 7. The overriding objective of the clarification is to ensure that financial assets with contractual cash flows that represent principal and interest only satisfy the requirements in IFRS 9. So the basic idea of the clarification is that an entity needs to consider how the cash flows on the financial asset would compare to a perfect instrument. And it's probably easier to explain this clarification through a simple example. So suppose we've got a financial asset with a variable interest rate that is reset every month to a 3-month interest rate. The relationship between the principal and the time value of money in this case is modified. So in accordance with the exposure draft, an entity needs to assess and compare the contractual cash flows on the instrument to those on a benchmark instrument. Now, in this case that I've mentioned, a benchmark instrument would be a financial asset with similar characteristics and credit quality, but with a variable interest rate that is reset on a monthly basis to a monthly interest rate. If the difference between the actual cash flows and those on the benchmark instrument could not be more than insignificant, the asset will qualify for measurement at amortized cost or fair value through other comprehensive income. If we move on to the business model assessment under IFRS 9, as it currently is, the ISB received feedback from some that only having two business models is sometimes too limiting. When an entity has financial assets that are managed both with the objective to hold to collect contractual cash flows and for sale, some question whether requiring measurement at fair value through profit or loss is appropriate, and whether fair value information in isolation was really appropriate for such a business model. An example of this was some portfolios banks hold to meet their regulatory liquidity requirements. The ISB also received feedback that the current IFRS 9 business model could lead to accounting mismatches as a result of the interaction with the accounting for insurance contract liabilities, where the ISB proposes that some changes in fair value should be recognized in other comprehensive income. In addition, the ISB also received application questions about when sales are consistent with such a business model, and these questions related to both the frequency and the nature of the sales. So by proposing clarifications to the hold to collect business model assessment, the ISB is hoping to improve the consistency of application. If we first look at the clarifications proposed to the hold to collect business model on slide 9, it is important to note that the exposure draft does not propose changing the objective of this business model. The objective is still to hold to collect contractual cash flows. So financial assets that qualify for amortized cost measurement under IFRS 9 today should continue to do so under the limited amendments. Although the clarifications may result in a narrower interpretation of the business model than some had previously assumed it would be, the ISB is only setting out to clarify what was intended in IFRS 9 originally. We were also told that at the moment IFRS 9 contains some apparent contradictions that make it unclear when sales of assets are considered to be consistent with a hold-to-collect business model. The exposure draft, therefore, removes some of the contradictory language, and it also includes additional guidance to clarify why an entity needs to consider the nature and volume of sales, in addition to other information such as how performance is monitored. So in other words, an entity needs to look at the frequency, significance and reasons of past sales, as well as expectations of future activity, to assess whether the cash flows are anticipated to be received through collection or through the sales proceeds. And it is important to note that these clarifications are not merely intended to accommodate an additional business model, but that the clarifications were required or needed, regardless of fair value through OCI. On page 10, if we turn to page 10, we can look at the main proposals in the exposure draft. Now, as we mentioned before, the ISB has received feedback that IFRS 9 does not properly reflect a business model where financial assets are held or managed to both collect contractual cash flows and for sale. So, for example, this would be the case when financial assets are managed to maximize a return through the collection of cash flows and from sale, or where financial assets regularly have to be sold to meet regulatory requirements. Under IFRS 9 today, these business models would fall within the fair value through profit or loss measurement category. The ISB therefore proposes to include a fair value through other comprehensive income measurement category. Now, it is easy to look at the exposure draft and think we've just reintroduced available for sale, but that's not the case. As is the case for assets measured at amortized cost, this is a mandatory category that is based on the cash flows of the asset and the way in which the assets are managed. And this is different to IAS 39. Because the assets in this category are held to both collect contractual cash flows and for sale, both amortized cost and fair value information is relevant. So this measurement results in both sets of information being provided. The P&L, or the profit and loss profile, is therefore the same as for amortized cost assets, and therefore the same impairment model applies. This removes a source of much of the complexity in IAS 39 associated with the available for sale category, where multiple impairment approaches was applied. Then finally, if we have a quick look at transition on slide 12, the ISB has received requests to make the own credit requirements in IFRS 9 available for application as soon as possible. Now, those are the requirements that to present changes in the fair value of an entity's liabilities due to changes in their credit quality in other comprehensive income rather than profit or loss. To address this, the exposure draft is proposing that once IFRS 9 is complete, an entity can choose to just apply the own credit requirements early without applying the other requirements in IFRS 9 from the same date. Effectively, this will result in entities being able to continue applying the IAS 39 requirements but report their own credit changes in OCI instead of fair value through profit or loss. The comment period on the exposure draft is open for another 4 weeks, just about. And we have been doing and will continue to do outreach during this comment period. And with that, I am happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Rihanna. Questions, observations? Alessandro.
It's not clear for me what the difference between this fair value through OCI and the old available for sale.
Not so easily asked, not so easily answered. Good luck, Rian.
Someone was bound to ask that question, I'm sure. Under IAS 39 today, the AFS category is a residual category. So in other words, if you don't meet the requirements for any of the other categories in IAS 39, you fall within the AFS category. And there was different accounting treatments applying to equity instruments and to debt instruments, and also various impairment models that apply to both of these. The fair value through other comprehensive income category that we are proposing in this exposure draft is based on a matter of fact. So your business model is evidenced through how the business is being, or that business model is being, performance is monitored, how information is reported, and how the assets are managed. So it's not a residual category. You have to prove that you meet this category in order to get the accounting that follows from this.
Joel.
Sorry. Just a practical question. As we work through IFRS 9 and the EU is kind of stuck with IAS 32 and 39 for some time, the question of own credit, which is a very controversial one here, especially, is out there and hasn't yet been implemented. I was wondering if there's any possibility of having an amendment to IAS 39 in the interim while all this gets worked through for own credit.
And I have to say, the ISB is very sympathetic to the own credit issue and, you know, trying to get it into place as soon as possible. When we looked at the the amendments. The own credit requirements have never been exposed within the context of IS 39. It wasn't written within that context. So in terms of timing, the quickest we could get it into practice was to put it into this exposure draft, as we are hoping and planning to get this all finalized by the end of the year, so it would be all available for endorsement by the end of, or from the end of the year. But the board has also noted that if for some unexpected reason the timing seems not to work out, we will consider bringing this into IFRS 9 2010 as an amendment, you know, in that way to getting it in there sooner rather than later.
Panagiotis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few comments, observations, and one question to Rihanna. On the comments, we take note of what you mentioned. We expect limited amendments. You mentioned IFRS 9 is fundamentally sound and operational, so we would support further fact-finding to understand which assets are going to move from the amortized cost to either of the categories of new fair value categories you mentioned, and also whether these changes will be consistent with the Basel Committee's also guiding principle that we also fully support. We don't expect this requirement to result in expansion of fair value accounting. On the question, you mentioned something on the liquidity regulation and implications for this. If you can explain, are you referring to the LCR, to the liquidity coverage ratio of the Basel Committee, or what is exactly the point? Thank you.
On the first question, as to which assets are being or we expect to move into the fair value through OCI category, the ISB did not intend or never intended to expand the use of fair values. We don't want to require more fair value to be used than is what is used under IFRS 9 as it is today. The clarifications or the introduction of the fair value through OCI category was not intended to move assets out of the amortized cost category into this. Like I said earlier, if you meet the amortized cost criteria under IFRS 9 as it is today, you will continue to do that under the limited amendments. What we are expecting is that some assets which did not meet the criteria under IFRS 9 today because there have been more than infrequent sales happening to move out of the fair value from profit or loss category into the fair value through OCI category. So in that sense, hopefully it will reduce some of the volatility that would have resulted from IFRS 9 originally by moving it into the OCI category. What I meant with the liquidity portfolios are not really the leverage ratio, but more financial institutions have to have portfolios of assets they can call upon, you know, in a liquidity crisis. So when they need liquidity, they can dispose of these assets. And under some of the regulations, they have to regularly sell these assets to prove the liquidity of the assets. And those are the kind of assets where if they've held within this portfolio to both hold to collect the cash flows, but also to realize fair value gains or to sell the assets to prove liquidity, they would fall within the OCI category.
Bruce, I was wondering if you could resist coming in on this.
Yeah, I couldn't. I just want to share my experience on this because, to be honest, I've probably spoken to people in nearly a dozen countries around IFRS 9. And what amazes me the most is the number of people who, I think, and I'm really talking about the guys out in the field, those people preparing accounts, who at the moment could barely tell you the difference between held to maturity and available for sale. We now get to a stage where when IFRS 9 first came out and I sat there and explained to them that all they had to worry about was the difference between fair value and amortized cost, they all understood it. And I actually think it's amazing how many of them praised the ISB for coming out with a simple standard that they could understand and they believe they could apply in practice. We then got to the stage within that standard of a couple of exceptions, but those were limited for equity instruments, and we could kind of live with it. Trying to explain this to some of them has been virtually impossible. And I accept the nuances are within the standard, but the challenge is that you're getting back to a stage where the only people who understand what we're talking about are treasury experts again and banking experts. And we're getting back to the stage where we're taking IFRS 9 out of what I think 99% of accountants understand and almost getting back to the 1% perfectly understand it. So whereas I accept that there has been challenges and the ISB is trying to respond, my only comment would be that from what I'm seeing in practice, people are not understanding, that they understood what initially came out, and we're getting back to where IS-39 was. I just had to share that.
Vincent.
Just a question. From a statement of financial position perspective, could you just clarify the current values? Will you just be seeing the, on a subsequent measurement basis, would you just be seeing the fair value, or would you see both the fair value and the amortized cost?
Okay. So if we start with the statement of financial position, the fair value through OCI measurement category will result in the assets being measured at fair value. So the balance sheet will reflect the fair value on the asset side. When we go to the income statement or the statement of other comprehensive income, because the profile of the assets are similar to an amortized cost asset, you would have the same interest revenue recognition and the same impairment models flowing through the P&L process. And any other fair value changes other than the credit, you know, the changes due to credit risk will go through the OCI bucket on the balance sheet.
You won't get the carrying amount at amortized cost.
No, you won't. Your balance sheet won't reflect that carrying amount,
but you will get the same impairment disclosures as for amortized cost assets. So the note disclosures regarding impairment will be the same for fair value OCI and for amortized cost. You just won't see an impairment allowance on the balance sheet for the fair value OCI category because it's fair value measured, as Rihanna said. But the disclosures and information about credit quality will be the same.
All right. Well, I guess I would come back in a way to the point that Alessandro raised. It was raised in the context of the technical analysis. What's different about it? But reflecting on our earlier discussion about disclosure and communications, and to Bruce's point, I think many, if not most people, are going to be puzzled by the apparent similarity of the optics to the old model and the new one. So I think we face quite a communications challenge as to why this is a better mousetrap and to avoid some confusion. I'm not saying that to denigrate the merits of what's being proposed, but I do think it's going to be a challenge in terms of communications, not just launching this, but on an ongoing basis when people are going to see financials prepared using two different approaches that to the uninitiated seem very similar.
Yeah, all I want to say on that was, as we are doing our outreach during this period, and we'll continue to do that in the coming months, people are, or you know, users and preparers, they are starting to see the value in the fair value through OCI category. And we are, you know, to the extent that we can improve the drafting in the exposure draft to make this all clearer, we are getting some very good suggestions and recommendations from them how to do that. So it is something we will look into in making it as clear as we can. No, I think we still need to get to those. Yeah, maybe
they were probably just standards. They just. All right. Any last comments, observations? Tommaso.
So just a quick question. We use, especially in slide 7, I saw some wording that probably in English has some meaning, and I'm not sure that when it's translated could have the same meaning. And I'm referring to when we say that, you know, to the test with the benchmark financial instrument, we say that the variation should not be more than insignificant. Because it's translated, it probably possibly means different things. Does the board have in mind any at least, I know it's a principle base, but at least any level of threshold or something like that when he thought about more than insignificant or...
Not so pleasant in English, if it's any consolation.
All I can say is the board does not have a number in mind. So, you know, there's not a percentage we can point to and say that is more than insignificant or less than this, you know, would be okay. But more than insignificant, I just want to clarify, is different from something that is significant.
Thanks a lot. And now I know, it's having clear.
I know this is a...
We're not going to resolve that in the time available. But your point, you raise an important.
Yeah.
We are aware. See, we've prompted a few more. Leo?
Thank you, Paul. I was just wondering what it is in Italian, but... a question for staff is, I mean, one of the things you explained in the presentation is that this was one way to reduce differences with US GAAP. Now, of course, it's not entirely the same because there's differences in the classification and measurement in that respect. Maybe two questions in that regard. Do you believe that at least the borderline between the categories will be comparable? Because I mean, users will probably want to understand what it is that they need to compare with what if they want to compare IFRS with US GAAP. And second, since the FASB has issued its proposals, how do you see the process going forward in terms of the further deliberation of the borderline between the categories, so that maybe we can get an idea of where you think that's going in the final standard. Thank you.
So on the first question around the borders between the categories, this was all part of the joint deliberations that the two boards had before the exposure draft was published. And during those deliberations, the two boards agreed on the objective of each of these categories, so the objective of amortized cost and the objective of fair value through OCI measurement. So the wording between the two standards may not be exact. There may be wording differences. And in the application guidance, you may find that on the edges of these buckets, on these two groups, you may have some differences. But that's due to historic differences and the way the standards were set out before. So in the majority of the cases, the guidance should end up with the same answer, but there may be one or two cases, especially around the edges, where the answers may be a bit different between our exposure draft and that of the FASB. In terms of going forward, we are talking to the FASB on a very regular basis at the moment. And we expect that once their comment period has closed on the exposure draft, the two boards will get together and do some joint deliberations on the comments they've received on both of these exposure drafts and see to what extent there is common ground to be found in getting to a further solution from here on.
I see two cards remaining, so first to Marcus.
Yeah, I have to come back to the matter of convergence, and I listened very interested, and still it leaves me with one question. Will the differences be material or not?
Could be, I think, is the...
I think it's hard to say, but Rhianna's right that the history matters, and so we started with no fair value OCI category. They all had already developed a fair value OCI category. And I think from the FASB's starting position, they really felt that securities that were traded in the active market should be at fair value on the balance sheet, whereas our board felt that if, irrespective of the nature of the asset, if it was held to collect contractual cash flows, amortized cost was a good measurement. So we started in those two different places. We managed to get to a common objective, but because of the different history, I think there will be differences, and I don't think we should say that there aren't. But I think by having a fair value through OCI category and by having common objectives, at least for the different business models, we're a lot closer than we were before, and the board set out to reduce differences. So it's not perfectly aligned, but I think it's a lot closer than it would otherwise have been. And we're going to do joint outreach, and I think during the joint outreach we'll probably get more of a sense of where the differences lie, which will be good information for the boards to have for re-deliberations.
Riaz.
Just looking at the accounting, trying to split out the income side of the hold and sell category, people might actually prefer to go back to the old AFS and just put the whole fair value in the balance sheet and everything through equity. And on a fair value basis, on a comprehensive income, you get the same answer.
That's a fair comment that people, when they're looking at this and any other refinement, have to ask themselves whether, you know, from a cost-benefit point of view, is this worth the effort or not? So we'll wait and see. Any other shots? Otherwise, thank you very much, Rihanna. A very useful update and close to the end of this particular chapter, we hope.
I think you said that before.
Yes, that may just be the kiss of death on that one.